Thursday. Friday Eve. Gotta love it. Welcome to Insight on Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Thanks for hanging out today. Big weekend store. I can't share everything that I'm doing this weekend because some people may be too jealous. Hey, listen, we got some great feedback from last week's show. And I encourage you to always give us a call or email to let us know what you like. And if you don't like anything, keep it to yourself. No, of course, I want to hear that as well. Mark at MarkFarrowMotivation.com. Mark at MarkFarrowMotivation.com. One of the questions was, how long did we stay at the bar down the block to celebrate Cinco de Mayo? Well, I don't have a definitive answer because not all my faculties were intact after the Cinco de Mayo, but it may have been the 6th de Mayo by the time we left, right? That would be 6th day of May? Yeah, okay, whatever. So it's one of those crazy days. You ever have like a mass chaos morning? That's my day so far this morning. Overslept. Actually, it started last night, and one of the topics we're going to be talking about today is about undertaking something in life that's a little bit daunting, new to you, but you plunge into it because that's what you do in life. You know, there's a lot of people in life that take risk and take challenges. We're going to meet some of those people. Two incredible guests in a few minutes that are starting something that's never been done before on a very, very compelling platform for all people. Sounds interesting, right? That's called a tease, my friends. That means don't go anywhere. You have to stay right here. So anyway, so from oversleeping to being up till 3 o'clock in the morning, so that's why I overslept. And then everything was in disarray this morning. Kids, everything dropping stuff, spilling stuff, you know, extra things needed at school. Nothing's ready. Ill-prepared for my show. What? Ill-prepared for the show? Never. I can't say that. But I do have my, like, 50,000-ounce cup of tea right here, which I have to pause and take a sip of. I said no. I said just say no to Starbucks this morning because I refuse to spend, actually take out a fifth mortgage to pay for another cup of chai, my favorite. Anyway, so one of the things I want to talk about is, you know, we talk about a lot of things on this program, things I speak about to live audiences, overcoming adversity, anti-bullying, mental health, and celebrating differences, drugs and alcohol. Yeah, I got your interest now, right? Well, one of the things I also like to speak about are, you know, parenting things, and because we have a lot of parents and obviously single people out there, single parents of every level. So my kindergarten child came home the other day. She actually has a name, but we'll call her kindergarten child because I like the way that sounds. I'm going to give her a T-shirt that says kindergarten child. Anyway, she told me, Dad, you know how to sign language? You had to sign I'm hungry? I'm like, no. I can say it in Spanish, but I can't sign it. So she starts showing me what she's learned in kindergarten sign language-wise, and I think this is incredible. I don't know if this has been part of the curriculum for a while, but I just think it's just incredible that, first of all, we know that the brains are so ready and so moldable for multiple languages at that age, up to 3, 4, 5, 6, I believe. And so, but the fact that they're incorporating signing, I just think speaks volumes. And she's actually learning Spanish, so she knew what I was saying when I said, muy tengo hambre. Yeah, I'm hungry. I'm actually very hungry right now. Going back to the mass chaos this morning, never had time for breakfast, hence the big cup of tea here. Anyway, so I digress. So I think it's very, very respectable that the school curriculum involves signing. Does your school? As a matter of fact, I don't think I even went to pre-K. I never went to pre-K. And did I go to – no, I did go to kindergarten. Kindergarten you have to go to, right? Yes, I think so. No, you don't have to go to kindergarten? I think it's a law. Yes. I'm getting nods, yes and no. You guys hash it out when we come back on. We'll figure it out. I think it's a law that you have to go. Law or requirement, I don't know the difference there. But I think it's pretty stellar that, number one, it gives a very, very early introduction to people and their differences. Okay, it's kind of cute that she can sign, I'm hungry and I love you and all that jazz. But the underlying message is that why would you use this? You would use it for people who are hearing impaired or deaf. And that obviously opens the door to disability and differences and a greater subject, which they wouldn't face or experience right then, hopefully, but bullying. and being taunted or picked on because of someone having a difference, someone being in a chair in fifth or sixth grade, or being visually impaired or blind or deaf or on the autism spectrum. You name it. I mean, there's no shortage of disabilities in this world, by all means. So I think it's a great entree for kids of that age and even older. I hope it continues. I'd like to, you know, learn more and more about that because I think it's fantastic. And it just made me realize that, you know what? I would love to learn sign language. It may be hard for me to kind of communicate in a conversation because it's hard being visually impaired. It's kind of hard for me to see the person communicating with me. But, you know, hey, nonetheless, I could be I could have a monologue with myself and never get anything wrong because no one would be able to correct me. So I've always thought a great deal of people who are just spearheading new initiatives in life, whether it's just for themselves, starting a new career, especially nowadays. It's very, very common to be in a job for 10, 15 years, and then all of a sudden, bam, you're out on the street. As a matter of fact, one of my friends came over last night and I said, "Hey, how's your brother Eddie doing?" He goes, "He got blown out." I said, "No." He said, "Yeah, he was with a financial institution for, you know, X amount of years, 18 years, you know, so they brought in somebody new, you know, the whole story, half the salary, blah, blah, blah." So he's kind of bummed out. And that's kind of the common landscape nowadays in the professional world. And I'd say, actually, years ago, I started saying in about 2008, the rest of the world in multiple industries is now like radio. Radio has always been like that. There's a very kind of short shelf life. And no allegiance. And now this is in a macro sense, a general sense. There are different broadcasting media companies that are more appropriate with their employees, treat them with more respect, and especially with tenure. But of course, you have to perform in any job. But it goes back to my point where it's just interesting how, you know, there is no allegiance. And I understand that business is business, but things do change. But the fact that people can reinvent themselves. You know, I have kind of reinvented myself after being in the radio for full time for 18, 20 years. I always say 18 to 20 because I never remember. So I just kind of put it so you can say 18, 20 years. So it just makes it easier because I'm also not good at math because of my visual impairment. I'm going off on tangent here. So anyway, so I started my speaking business, as you know, and it's great and it's not easy. And our guests that we're going to meet in a few minutes again are embarking on something new, trailblazing something that's never been done before. And it's scary. It's daunting. You second guess yourself a lot of times when things aren't working well, especially when you're looking at your bank account thinking, oh, crap, I need to spend X amount for my web designer. I need this printed. I need that executed. I need a PR person. I need a booker. And next thing you know, it's ka-ching, 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 and maybe not, you know, you're not getting a lot of receivables, the paychecks. Or it takes 30, 60, 90, 120 days to get paid, and you're politely calling these people up going, "Hello, is there any way you can process this check, you know, in the next millennium?" So that's the issue I like to talk about. So people who try different tasks. And I'm kind of reminded of this because this is brought to my attention because I've done a lot of things in life, as one of my talks alludes to, overcoming adversity. And I never thought anything of it until the last couple of years, actually when I met my wife. She would always point out to me that, you know, it's unbelievable that you can do X, Y, and Z. And I always just thought, well, hey, this is me, this is who I am, and this is how I do things. I do things differently, but I accomplish things because they interest me. And some things, you know, like everybody, you know, you can't do them because it's just too arduous. It's too out of your circle of comfort zone, et cetera. And that's happened. But my point I wanted to bring up to you is that I love carpentry. And I found that as an early outlet when I was in school. Fifth grade, when they started having industrial arts, I was a kid making the birdhouses just like everybody else. But flash forward to high school, I was in cabinet making, taking a lot of different classes and pumping out platform beds, coffee tables, night tables, wall unit bookshelves, like crazy stuff. And it was really, really funny. As a matter of fact, at one point, I've told this story before, but the shop teacher said, you know, if anyone needs any wood cut in the future, I don't want anyone using this saw anymore because he thought that it's, first of all, it is the most dangerous saw in the wood shop. But people were a little bit too careless. He goes, I have to cut the wood or go to Mark Farrell. And I was like, what? Go to me, the visually impaired kid? And that kind of solidified that, you know, even though I am visually impaired and put my face inches away from the blade, that I am able to do things, you know, how I want to and how they should be performed, because I take, you know, painstaking safety measures, et cetera. And it's important to me to do this because it makes me feel like just because I have a visual impairment or my difference makes me, you know, do things different, it doesn't matter. As long as you achieve what makes you happy and or the end result is the same. So long story short, I've been doing this for years, made all kinds of things, decks, you know, furniture, et cetera, et cetera. And I learned most of my craft, I'd say the foundation certainly in school, and then being on construction sites, which is a whole other interview in itself, conversation, because a lot of funny things happened there. As a matter of fact, I almost killed some guy. But that's because we had a liquid lunch that day celebrating my last day on a job and did too many tequila shots on like a 90-degree day and like 1,000% humidity. And I was driving a forklift and put him up in the air because he wanted me to, because he thought it'd be more fun than actually walking up the stairs, and he almost fell off into the building. But he survived and I took myself off the job. But that remains for a different story. Okay. So I still love woodworking. Been doing it for years and years and years. Bought a new house a couple years ago. I'm doing a crazy amount of work to it. So the other day, in a effort to, there's an addition put on a house that never had any concrete poured in the bottom of it. So when my in-laws come and stay over in the wintertime, it's kind of cold. So I poured concrete in the bottom of this crawl space. And it was a huge job. I mean, that thing is tight as a drum right now. But the last component to this effort that I want to do is replace the door that goes into the garage, because it's just not inefficient. So I'm like, all right, it should be not too bad. So I measured it and it looked like it was going to be a tight fit. Long story short, I started to put this door in Monday evening, and I finished it last night. Yes, it took me 3 days, not obviously working every day. It was a couple of hours every day. But the reality was I took on something that I'd never done before, installed many, many doors with someone else, like a master carpenter, and certainly thought I knew enough between plumbing a door, leveling it. There's a lot of nuances involved. But I had the confidence and the wherewithal to say, hey, this is the last component that I need to make this part of the house airtight. Let's do it. And, you know, I'm happy with the end result, very happy with the end result. But the reality was it was really, really tough. It was so tight that I was having problems making it fit. And if you can't shut the door, then, you know, what good is a door if you can't shut it all the way? So I was speaking to I have a lot of people, certainly that I'm very, very lucky to have, that are very, very incredibly skilled tradespeople who love, love, love to dole out advice to me. And they, I guess, love the fact that I'm into the trades. And anyway, I'm a frustrated tradesman. It's a great form of release and an art form for me and productivity. So long story short, I asked one of my buddies who is a master carpenter to come over yesterday. And the good news and bad news is, the good news is it took him with me about 3 hours still to do it, because it was so complex that we had to open up a wall, take out another stud, open up the header, take out, remove some segment from that. So it was very, very complex. So the reality is that I walked away feeling very, very good that, number one, I attempted it on my own. You know, I put in a good old college try, as you say, because, you know, it was just something I wanted to accomplish. And I thought, okay, I'd come up with another idea. I'd be in bed and like, oh, well, let me try X, Y, and Z. Maybe this will do it. Maybe I can square this up. Anyway, so I realized that I was in kind of over my head. I tried all the skills I had at my disposal, and then some. And then the guy who knows everything came over and still, it took him a little bit of effort, but, you know, he got it down to poof, beautiful. But he did leave at 9 o'clock last night with about a 4-inch gap above the door leading right into the garage. My wife's like, oh, that's nice. Is that like our new transom over the door? I'm like, no, that's what I got to fix now. So anyway, it's all buttoned up. And I point this out because there's always things in our lives, whether it's a door, a relationship, a job within your job that you want to shoot for, but you're intimidated to do it because maybe you're afraid what your boss may say to you. You're not experienced enough. But he also may say, or she may say, I was hoping you would come to me and ask for this position because I think you're immensely qualified. And if you weren't going to come and ask me, I was going to ask you eventually. Or maybe it's a relationship. Maybe you're dying to ask that person out. You don't have the wherewithal, the courage, the self-esteem. Or maybe you're in a relationship and it's just not working. Maybe it's a race that you want to do That's a prime example that not actually a race, maybe a multifaceted triathlon or duathlon, or maybe another type of a form of a very fun event that we're going to talk about momentarily. But we all have something that is in the back of our minds or maybe in the forefront that we want to tackle in life. So give yourself a little bit more credit and realize that you can do something that is uncomfortable. I mean, if something is always very, very comfortable in life, which a lot of us do because it's just called routine, then how do we really grow? And we want to grow, right? And we want to grow for ourselves because we feel better when we're learning and have learned and how we can impart different information and experiences to other people. I mean, that's pretty vital stuff, especially if you have kids. Even it just makes your life more interesting. And speaking of interesting, I find it's very interesting when I coach my 6-year-old soccer team, when I walk down the field and see all these signs that are put in by the management of the soccer league, which I applaud because it says, "Spectators, please remember, the coaches are volunteers, the referees are volunteers, and these are kids." Yes, they're just kids playing soccer. So please, please remain, you know, as a very, very, I forget how it's phrased exactly, but my point is that parents still watching 6-year-olds play soccer act a little bit crazy. So, I mean, these kids are having fun. And yet we have to remind parents. Sometimes I have to go to the sidelines and say, "Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, really appreciate your zeal. But the league doesn't really appreciate, you know, when you scream to this degree or whatever your the action was." And it's kind of embarrassing to me because here I am, an adult speaking to another adult. You think they would know better. And it's kind of funny that week in, week out, you see one of the not the officials, someone from the league having to go over to a parent and say, "You know, can you please bring it down?" As a matter of fact, I've been told twice this season so far, two parents have been ejected from watching a soccer game, a recreational league. Kind of crazy, huh? My God. So if you are out there, just remember these kids are out for fun. You know, don't be screaming your head off. Just cheer for both teams. As a matter of fact, every time the other team scores, I clap for them and say, "Yay, way to go, Monsters," or wherever their team is. Yeah, there is a team called Monsters. And because it's all about giving these kids confidence and, more importantly, having fun. And my kids played terribly the other day, and I said to them, "Did you have fun?" They're like, "Yeah." I said, "Okay, we're going to work on some more basics. But just remember, you have to work hard, not individually, but as a team." So moving forward, I got to bring you this. I know this isn't right off the presses, but this is something you probably read about it after Prince's death. Bruce Springsteen, whether you're a major Bruce fan or not, he's cool. He is cool. I mean, I like about, I don't know, 60% of his music, but I really applaud who he is and what he stands for, whether you like his political views or not. But he's just kind of a musician's musician. And he's just a cool, still grounded Jersey guy. It doesn't matter that he's from Jersey. It just happens he's from New Jersey. And I really applaud how he respects people who are great contributors to the world that we live in. And here is a piece of what he performed about 2 weeks ago at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. "Never meant to cause you any sorrow. Never meant to cause you any pain. I only wanted to see you laughing. Not bad, right? The Boss. I love how he hits his high notes in Bruce fashion. I love Neil's guitar solo. And it's just amazing. At the end, he just says, "Hey, Prince, forever," something of that nature. It opens the concert. The complete stage is purple, and I just got goosebumps. I'm such a sap, man. I just got goosebumps head to toe just even thinking about it. I wasn't there, and our forthcoming guests were there. They're just looking at me saying, we were there. And just after this break, we're going to meet Melissa Penn and Adam Stengel. They are the creators of Happy Fest. Now, when you hear the name Happy Fest, that says to you what? You got to listen, because what the hell is Happy Fest? Find out right after this. Because I'm Happy Fest. The show is Inside on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Happy Thursday to you, about 24 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, broadcasting in Midtown, New York City. I hope it's sunny wherever the hell you are, because we reach worldwide on the Gary Noel Network. Gary Noel is going to be after me at noon today. I'm very, very happy to introduce very happy people, co-founders of Happy Fest, Melissa Penn. Hello, Melissa. How are you?
Good.
Come up to that microphone, my dear. Don't be shy.
All right. How's
there
this?
There she is. It sounded like you were in last week over there. And her very handsome husband, Adam Stengel, who's the CEO of Happy Fest. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thank you.
Now, Happy Fest sounds like it could be a lot of things, and it is a lot of things. It's the only all ages, all abilities, wheelchair accessible, family fun obstacle course run, which in doing research for this and talking to you guys previously, I wasn't aware that obstacle course racing is the fastest growing sport in American history. Now, we think of obstacle course racing, people are like, what? You mean like mud runs, things of that nature, extreme sports? It's not so much the triathlons, because there are not obstacle courses, even though when I go to my transition area, I feel like it's an obstacle course. But that's amazing. And we're going to get into how you founded this and the execution of this. And there's so many very, very compelling factors. But I first want to tell our listeners that we met 2 weeks ago at a great expo called the Abilities Expo in New Jersey. And they travel the country, and I think there's about 8 or 10 different locations. And Ability Expo brings together people from all walks of life and abilities, which is very, very fascinating. I went to 2 or 3 of them, and I was very, very happy and lucky and fortunate to meet you two there, because you showcase something that you're unleashing or presenting this May in just a couple of days, and I think it's fascinating, along with other companies that are doing amazing things. So if you know somebody in your life that has a disability, if you have a disability, or if you want to learn about how people with disabilities live their lives, accessible, traveling, education, cool. I bought really cool t-shirts. I don't know if I showed you. Did I show you those when I met you guys? I got 2 t-shirts. This is how I roll. It's a black t-shirt, and it's a guy in a wheelchair like zipping down the street. And then love is spelled, the O is a guy in a wheelchair, a person in a wheelchair, and another very cool t-shirt. But there are so many different things. So abilities, I think it's abilities.com or abilities.org, but check it out. But so this is a great, great concept that you came up with, Happy Fest. And it's happening May 20th and
May
21st. I'm sorry.
Saturday.
I should know that by Saturday now. In Englishtown, New Jersey, Raceway Park. And tell us about the inception of such a great, great concept.
Well, you know, we were always looking for things to do as a family. And we have 4 kids. Their ages are between 14 and 9. And it's very difficult to find stuff that everybody can do together. And moreover, our oldest has, due to a bleeding disorder, has been in a wheelchair from time to time. And that, you know, has put us in a position that we can't do certain things. So we had been to a couple of different runs. We've done some 5Ks. We did a glow run. We did a color run. They were fantastic. But we still felt that it wasn't fully inclusive, that the whole family couldn't do it, or there were people that were either in strollers or wheelchairs or crutches or whatever that were certainly not able to do 5K.
So in these races, were all 4 of your offspring doing them?
Well, they couldn't. So that's the thing. Some of us were some of the little ones
couldn't,
had to watch,
not.
Or
sure.
You know. So that's was the whole. That's really how this was born.
So it was an age slash ability aspect.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know. So we just thought it would be great to do something together, and I mean, I wanted to do the Tough Mudder, to be honest with you, but there was just not a chance that I was going to do the Tough Mudder. It's an incredibly difficult 13-mile course, and mm-hmm. I'm not as young as I used to be. So, but I was always fascinated by it. I mean, the obstacles are great. The people look like they're just having a great time, despite the fact that they are working as hard as they are. And we did learn that obstacle course racing is the fastest growing sport in American history. It's over 4 million people a year are doing it now.
It's crazy.
It's double the amount of people that are doing half marathons and full marathons.
Yeah.
And it's shocking. But those races are not serving the entire community. In fact, they're really serving a very narrow group of people who are
sure.
in pretty good shape.
Mm. Yeah. I wonder about the demographic, if it's different, because demographically, for people who do half marathons, and certainly for marathons, they're usually 40s and 50s, because it's a very mature sport, because you need a lot of patience, and you have to know your body. And usually when I was younger, actually I did my first marathon when I was 25 or 27. That's kind of young for the marathon side. But I wonder, like these obstacle courses, a Tough Mudder example, if they actually skew on the older side, or it's the people who are like have no interest in doing marathons or burn out.
It would be just by my visual, having mm-hmm. seen it, I think it's a little bit younger than marathons and,
sure.
and half marathons. But if you do, like, if you go on to the New York Marathon and just stand on the sideline, you'll see people, you know, from 20 to
absolutely.
80.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty incredible.
Exactly. So, Melissa, tell me, what is your experience with the world of disability?
Well, I've actually had a varied experience in the world of disability, including really my work experience from the time I was in high school working with adults with disabilities, adults with developmental disabilities, and in college, adults. I was a personal care attendant for an adult who was quadriplegic and ran a program for adults with developmental disabilities. And then myself, right before law school, I was in a car accident and had a spinal cord injury. So personally, professionally, I've been in that world for quite a while. And then when I had my first child, he had hemophilia, which was an absolute shock. I was worried about a whole lot of things, but I certainly wasn't worried about a bleeding disorder.
Furthest thing on the radar for you, right?
That one never crossed my mind. And so then all of a sudden we were thrown into this world that we really
had no knowledge of.
No knowledge of. We were very fearful. We were like most people, and we thought it meant that if you got a paper cut, you'd bleed to death, which is not at all what it means. It's mm-hmm. actually about internal bleeding, not external bleeding.
Which sometimes could be even a scarier thought.
Sure.
I won't see it.
That's right.
You know?
When he was a little baby,
sure.
we were terrified because he couldn't talk, so we didn't know what was going on. So, in fact, when he was an infant and he would wake up during the night, I'd be so happy to see him because I know he'd be okay. That created some pretty bad sleeping habits, so we got over that one. And then as he got older, we were just quite isolated. We didn't know anybody with a bleeding disorder. We had great medical care, but we didn't know any people. So when he was in pre-K, as you talk about with kindergarten, when he was in pre-K, we started a hemophilia walk as a way to try to find some other people and raise some awareness in the community.
That was here in New York City?
That was here in New York City in 2006. In fact, our 11th walk is going to be on June 5th. And it started very small, right? It was just my son and his pre-K class in the first one, maybe about 150, 200 people.
And it's grown, too.
And it's grown, and every year we get about 2,000 people now. And it's in 40 cities across the country.
That's amazing.
And it has been really amazing. It's been a really great galvanizing force across the community, across the country, really, of people doing the same thing, mm-hmm. working towards the same goal, trying to raise awareness, build community, and do fundraising.
Kudos to you, Melissa. That's amazing, starting such a... So how did this spearhead into all these different states? Did you start an online community?
So for the third... By the time of the third walk, the national organization said, hey, this looks like a good idea.
Yeah.
People actually come to
this. Let's jump on
this.
Board here.
So we had a we formed a committee to see should this be a national event, and the national organization, National Hemophilia Foundation, said, you know, let's do this. So it started with 5 cities and then went to 10 and grew every year.
Wow.
And now it's in 40 cities. And
what is the, do you know the total money raised annually because of these walks?
It's I think it's about $20 million now.
Wow.
It's definitely, the last time I checked, it was almost 15. So, yeah, it's certainly the single biggest fundraiser in the history of the National
Foundation. So I have to go back to what we were talking about earlier, and maybe you mused about this when I was talking about this, about doing something you've never done before. And now maybe the circumstance certainly was different because you were kind of thrust into this, obviously, with your firstborn. But it's not like you had to start a walk. Obviously, the first and foremost thing is you just inundate yourself with as much information as possible, as I see Adam smiling as well. And that's obviously what a parent does. You want to protect and keep your child as healthy as possible. But then you took this to a whole nother level where 40 of these walks exist. How does that make you feel?
I'm
tired.
Definitely tired, Mark. I mean, it's an incredible feeling. I mean, the first time, it was probably year 3 or 4 where we, you know, got into the park, and all of a sudden there was a sea of people there. And, you know, we were just all, you know, incredulous. Like, we're like, how did this just happen? And, you know, it's really, I give all the credit to Melissa, and there were a few other families that were amazing early on that we worked together with, and they really got it out there, and they just killed it. I mean, it's an amazing event.
It's very interesting also. I'm not going to get too far off point here, but I don't know what your lives were before you met, but it works that, you know, you have a JD degree.
Yes.
And you have all these different things you're proficient in as a teacher, etc. Adam, you're a musician.
I am.
By profession, correct?
I'm a professional musician, but I'm also a lawyer by day. At times.
My God, what a great meeting of the minds here, and what you've created for the walk, et cetera, for 40 walks. Is it called in one actual headlining banner name for the walk?
Well, you can go on the National Hemophilia Foundation's website, and it's called the Hemophilia Walk.
Great. And the one here is in New York City.
This is the New York City Hemophilia Walk, June 5th in Riverside Park on 83rd Street, 9
great.
O'clock.
And what's the website for that?
Well, you can go on our website, the New York NYHemophilia.org.
If you don't know how to spell hemophilia, just go H-E-M and just hit Google.
That's right.
You know, it'll come up. But that's incredible, as you mentioned. So, Adam, are you playing? Does your band jam in any of these walks?
So we don't have my band jamming at one of these walks, okay. But we will be playing a little bit at Happy Fest.
Okay, good. So let's get into Happy Fest. So you had the idea, certainly, to make this all-inclusive for people in chairs, people of all ages, people of all abilities. And then how did the idea come? Was it more about understanding? Obviously, you had the success of all these walks, hemophilia walks, and you're thinking like, okay, well, maybe there's something more that we can build and attract, not only something for our 4 kids, but in a macro sense.
Families are just starved for some level of fitness. I mean, everybody needs to be fit. If you have a disability or if you do not have a disability, your health is really the only thing that matters at the end of the day, and doing healthy things
together,
together
as a family. It's just
exactly
fun.
What we were thinking. We thought we could reach a broader audience over time. Maybe one day Happy Fest will be in 40 cities as well. But we thought, you know, we really did this thing with the bleeding disorders community, and it grew. So let's see if we can broaden the reach and get to some more people who maybe have been underserved for a really, really long time. And, you know, this whole family fitness concept, you know, really, really spoke to us.
So did you have other concepts before this in terms of the obstacle course? Was there different variations of this before you said, okay, here's what we're going to do?
Not really. But once we started talking about the obstacle course, it was very obvious that we would not and could not do it unless it was an event that everybody could participate in. Because the whole thing about obstacle courses, and it was so intriguing, sounded like so much fun to us, is that I felt like I couldn't do it with my spinal cord injury. And certainly my kids, the younger ones, wouldn't do it. And so if we were going to do something, we would not do it if it couldn't be something that spoke to all families. And that was really the key. Whatever your family looks like, whoever you are, you should be able to do something together. And we certainly know that in families, if there is a sibling who has some sort of disability, then they have an even greater challenge mm-hmm. of doing something together.
Sure, absolutely. And it, obviously, oh my God, what a tall order, though. You're thinking these are a lot of different descriptives that you're putting out there, and not so much demands, but want lists. So how did you devise something that could be, I mean, you use yourself as an example. With a spinal cord injury, you look like you walk around quite well, but with your son and other disabilities in consideration, how did you decide on what is going to be the end result?
Well, that took quite a while. We had this idea, and it we worked on it for about a year and a half to 2 years to find an obstacle course builder who was in sync with our ideas.
Does your living room resemble an obstacle course?
It does, but that's more about the laundry and four kids in an apartment.
I mean, New York City is a obstacle course that's functioning, right. You know, 24/7.
So I would love if we had a big space and could do the obstacles
sure.
there. But really, it took a while to find somebody, and we found a great partner who loved the idea. He was already a builder, and his builder builds houses, so he knows how to build safe ramps, as he's done before. But he's an obstacle course builder. That's what he does. He has obstacle courses, the Survivor Race. He's amazing and loved the idea that maybe it could be done a little bit differently.
You know, in many ways, Mark, it's actually still and probably will be for years a work in progress. Mm. We're going to find out. This is our inaugural Happy Fest, May 21st. And as excited as we are, we're really excited about learning what works best in something like this and what maybe doesn't work. And there'll be bumps along the way, and we know that. But you got to start somewhere. And
absolutely.
So many of these organizations that we've been reaching out to, large organizations that cater to, you know, some in the disability mm-hmm. community and some not, just with children or whatever, are very, very excited about it. And, you know, they're really just, they want to help us find the right equilibrium
Absolutely.
To make this a great thing.
Was it easy to acquire sponsors?
Well, that's interesting. Sponsors actually found us. So in that way, I think that
that must have solidified your belief in what you're building.
Absolutely. In that way, I think that we speak to an obvious missing niche of fitness together. And those are the people who tended to find us. So that's been great. And I assume that that's just going to build over the years. Mm-hmm. But there's been an increasing amount of interest. And certainly the Abilities Expo was a great place to meet people and talk. And
exposure, sure.
I think that as time goes on, that will just build on itself. But I would have to say that was pretty awesome when people found us and said, hey, we would love some gyms. And Robert Wood Johnson Fitness and Wellness said, you know, we'd love to be involved. And they're going to be there. And they're going to we're going to have free fitness classes in the festival. And they're doing 4 fitness classes, which sound awesome and exciting. And we love that happened. And I'm excited going forward to see what that looks like.
We're going to get more into how the day is going to unfold. But I want to get down to more of the nuts and bolts, because I'm sure people who are listening live or via the podcast after this broadcast will want to know, what exactly is this going to entail? Because, okay, I'm in good shape. Now I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, and my wife is in decent shape. Now, how can we all do this race? Give me some examples, please. Paint a picture of what it would go. Is this a mass start, or is this you can go whenever you want between the hours of 8 and 11? How does this work?
So we have waves starting at 9:30 every half an hour. So you'll sign up for a wave, and we have, you know, the builders will be there, you know, allowing people onto the course as it becomes available. We don't want people crashing into each other. We want families and groups doing it together, but we want it to be fun and we want it to work. And it will. We definitely have enough space on the course to make that happen. But I'll talk a little bit about the actual obstacles that we're building now. I mean, so first of all, I mean, I don't want people to think that this is the Tough Mudder. This is definitely the family race. It's about 1 mile and 2 tenths-ish.
Without the mud.
With no mud. I mean, we want you to, you know, we want wheelchairs to be, you know, usable after the event. And we want people to stay after the event, because we have live music and we have these fitness classes, and we want people to hang out and just have a beautiful day.
/ the fest part.
The fest, exactly. So you'll get on the course. There'll be each obstacle has a alternative option. So while traditionally you'll have people stepping through tires, which we will have, right next to that will be something for people who can't step through tires, and it'll be a tire slalom essentially. And we'll build that, you know, so that if you are stepping through the tires, but you're you know, your wife or your spouse is can't do that, you're still going to be proximate, and then you'll finish that obstacle and then move on to the next one. We'll have a rope climb where you ring a bell, also very typical, but for people who can't climb, we're going to actually have a weighted rope pull down. The bell will come to you. It'll be on a pulley. So
I can't climb a rope.
Yeah, exactly. Well, who can? But I don't want, like I said, I mean, this is really a family thing. This is, we want people who do these races, the Tough Mudder, to come and bring their young kids to as an introduction. They're, you know, we're not doing 13 miles. Those folks are not going to be training for months and months in advance. But it is a great introduction to people who already love obstacle courses, for them to bring their other family members, whether it be their children or their parents who are you know, aging, but they just want to have fun together as a family.
And sure, think about the confidence building.
Absolutely.
You know, the fact that they can say, wow, first of all, we're doing it together, and secondly, you know, I did this. That's fantastic.
And in fact, Mark, you're an ideal family, right? A three-year-old and a six-year-old, and parents who like to do physical things, there's not that much that you can do with your kids at one time.
Besides throwing them on the back of the bikes and
Throwing them on the back of the bikes that they can actually do themselves too, right? Because they're not riding their own bikes, or at least one of them's not riding their own bikes yet. So so that is a great example of people who would have an awesome time at the event.
And it's really just, it just kind of mirrors parenting in general, because you want them to emulate who you are to a certain degree, how you talk, how you interact with people, your diet, study habits, the way you interact with people, and the way you exercise.
It's all in.
Recreate.
Everything is together. And yes, it's all about the family fitness, but it is the togetherness. And I think that, you know, this was really what we wanted, some vehicle that you can do all together. And I keep going back to that same point because I see, you know, you take your kids to the ball field. It was your daughter that was playing soccer, I think you spoke about.
Son, sure.
Oh, your son. And but you weren't, you know, you're not playing. You're watching them play, or you're coaching, or your wife's watching them, and vice versa. When an adult is doing some race or what have you, and the kids are watching, here, this is just really an opportunity to have fun together. You do it the mile and two. It'll take you probably a half an hour, maybe a little bit more. You'll be smiling. You'll get your medal. You'll really just have a family memory, and then you'll come off, listen to some music, do a couple fitness classes, and go home happy.
That's the voice of Adam Stengel. He's the CEO of Happy Fest, and his wife and co-partner and co-founder, Melissa Penn, is here. My name is Mark Fowler. The show's Insight on a Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. If you have any questions or comments, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We're talking about Happy Face. That's what you guys are, Happy Face. Happy Fest, which is an obstacle racing, the only all ages, all abilities, wheelchair accessible, family fun, obstacle course fun event taking place in Englishtown, New Jersey on May 21st, which is a Saturday. And the website to sign up is
www.happyfestnj.com.
Of course, you encourage people to sign up in advance, but is there on-site sign up for the day of?
Absolutely.
Great. And you glossed over this a moment before, Adam, but I want to back up a little bit. They get medals. So for someone who's never done any type of athletic endeavor, or maybe even in school, because sometimes schools give out medals, but just to get something symbolic of that nature is going to just be so much of a life-changing and such a, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, life changer. I mean, just a crystallization, and the fact that they can go home and show people this and wear it to school and be proud.
This was Melissa's thing with the walk. The very first walk, she's like, we got to do medals. Now, when we set this walk up, we literally had like 2 weeks or so to put it together, because this was going to be an event that was being done originally by the National Foundation. They didn't want to do it. So when we found that they weren't doing it, they said, here, take our permit and you do it. So we had 2 weeks, and she
Oh, thanks. Exactly.
So they desperately, like, she desperately, you know, said they have to get medals. And it was such a fast thing to procure.
Probably no financial assistance either.
Well, we had to do it ourselves. Mm. And then we got a couple of sponsors, like, for water and a few other things for that first event. But the medals were funny because we had to do it so fast that we got medals with the number 2 on it. But what I loved about that is the kids were just so happy. They got their medals. They walked around.
Oh,
they were so
sure.
proud. They wore them to school for, like, the next few days.
Of course.
And it was, you know, just
a tangible item that they can show to people.
It's very important. And you know what? You deserve it.
Yeah, they do. They do.
So for Happy Fest, we have our beautiful Happy Fest medal. I love it. But we also learned over time that adults love their medals, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was a learning process for me. And so, yes, every single person, every single age, every single ability, you come off the course together and you get your medal.
One of my talks on overcoming adversity at the end, it's about a 20-minute story about my first triathlon attempt and how I, right before the race goes off, the gun goes off, I realize I can't see the swim course. What do I do? You know, it's kind of a life or death, sink or swim, literally, situation. And I go through it, and I get through it, but I had all these very, very funny, riveting parts of the story. But at the end, I say, this is 20 years ago, and I've yet to see a swim course, but it doesn't matter because I know I'll finish, and I just follow everybody else, and I hold up these medals, and it's just, you know, I don't know, 50 or 80 medals that all clang together, and people are mesmerized by it. But I like it. That's the only time I get show it off because it's a prop for talks to show people that you can do anything you want in life. But, you know, in my proud little moment, they're on a big string that I hold, and my kids love playing with them. But, you know, for all those years, they just stood in a closet, hung on a metal hanger. But it just solidified kind of, you know, what I did. I certainly didn't do it for that. I just do it for the self-satisfaction. I don't do it for the competition. The competition is actually with Mark Farrell, with myself.
Yes.
But for the kids, it's a whole different, you know, ball game altogether. And so afterwards, and during, actually, you're going to have a festival going on. You're going to have music. I don't know if it's live music or a DJ. Food. And hence the name, Happy Fest, man.
As a musician, I felt it was incredibly important to have live music
mm-hmm.
there. Family friendly. It'll be nice, relaxing. You know, we're not doing, Pantera covers. It's just going to be a really nice day. You know,
if I request Pantera,
of
man,
course,
you better, of
you'll
course.
Get the acoustic version.
Okay.
But, you know, Raceway Park, where we're having this, has this incredible history. The Grateful Dead played there in 1977, I think it was.
I did not know that.
And there were hundreds of thousands of people, and it was an incredible historical event. That
were you there?
People, I'm not there. You know, I was 7 or 8 at the time, so no, I didn't make it. But
hey, I was the same age. We could have commuted together somehow.
Absolutely.
Man. Two big wheels driving down the street.
So it was, you know, it was in that area. There's this history of music. And we felt it was absolutely important to
That's imperative.
Live music.
And also it just invites people to stay longer.
I
and that's
want
what
people.
You want. You
we want
to make
people.
It, yeah, to hang out. Bring a blanket and hang out, you know, and just, you know, marvel. And can you do the course more than once if you like?
No, we're going to do the course once. You're going to go through it. And like I said, it's in waves, so
mm-hmm.
it'll be a
sure.
one time.
Oh, I see. That's great. So going back to the actual planning stages of this, has it been laid out or did you have to discuss it with anyone else to find out the difficulty level, or if something is a little bit too difficult, you think you would nix it or try to make it easier?
Well, we've been working very closely with the obstacle course builder and with PTs to make sure that the obstacles are safe and doable. There will be a number of options. For instance, in the rope climb, we'll have a rope climb. Then the one next to it will have knots in it, so it'll be a little bit easier to get up.
Okay, great.
And
I'll
the
take
one
that
next
rope.
To it will be for people standing or sitting who don't want mm-hmm. to or aren't able to climb up a rope. They can pull the rope down and ring the bell.
Sure. Awesome. Fantastic. So as lawyers, does an event like this make you get nervous? Lots of waivers.
Well, I have to say that safety is always, that is my number one
paramount
thing, whether
sure.
it's a walk, whether it's an obstacle course. So yes, we probably are a little more attuned to that. So we want to make it really, really tight. Obviously, we have insurance, and that's part of the fee.
Was it hard getting a carrier?
There are carriers that, you know, sort of cater to this sort of thing,
okay,
but
great.
It's not cheap.
Sure.
Yeah, so obviously insurance is the key, but keeping it safe is so paramount. So actually on the course itself, At each obstacle, we're going to have PTs there as well, helping people through the course.
Explain what PTs are to our
listeners. A physical therapist.
Yeah. And which is great because they can help with a lot of things that occur if someone has a lot of injuries and or ongoing things, issues with being in a chair, and they try to do something maybe that's beyond their capacity.
And it just
great.
For the rest of us, having them there, it certainly makes me feel better. I think it's going to make it just more seamless and fun that there are people who really know what they're doing right there, and they're so psyched about having this event because something like this hasn't been done before. So the PTs they're really thrilled to be part of it, and they're certainly excited that it may inspire fitness. For the safety aspect, I'm thrilled, and I really do so much appreciate all of their help.
Do you think that you could have embarked with this initiative without the success of the hemophilia walks, taking on something so gargantuan?
I just think that...
It gave you a lot of confidence, I'm sure.
I just think that it's... Wherever your journey takes you, I mean, you really don't know where it's going to take you.
Is this the kumbaya moment?
Certainly wouldn't have, you know, as lawyers, as somebody with a spinal cord injury, no, would I have thought that this would be it? But yet, all those experiences, that is what brought us here somehow. And so, certainly, I don't think without the walk, the idea would have even occurred to us that there's... that we could do something and execute upon it like that.
Yeah, the simple answer is I think without the walk, there's just this would not be happening.
Yeah.
That we learned how to put on an event. Now this event is different, and it is a massive undertaking. But like I said, over time we really think that
just
it's
like
going to grow
else,
into something amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now where would you like to see this event in 5 years? Up to 1,000 people?
Well, we would love to be getting regularly at least that many people to the event. We would also like to see it. We want to bring this togetherness, this inclusiveness, this family fitness concept to as many cities as we can. We're negotiating to do a Long Island event in the fall. Same thing.
Fantastic.
And then, you know, as the years go by, you know, with the help of the communities, we would start branching out from here to as many places as want to have us. And we think that there are going to be a lot of places that want something like this. And as soon as the world knows we are.
And social media is going to, you know, catch on like wildfire. We're talking about Happy Fest Obstacle Course and Festival happening May 21st, which is a Saturday in Englishtown, New Jersey. Website again to log on?
HappyFestNJ.com.
You're hearing the voice of Melissa Penn. Thank you, Melissa, so much for all that you've done. I mean, as a parent, as an organizer on so many levels, and Adam Stengel, president and CEO, and the husband of Melissa, and yes. A great partnership. You seem like you've built something just so substantial and so giving for your family and for families, you know, hopefully in a tri-state area, certainly with the advent of Long Island as well. And we wish you all the best. And hopefully I'm going to be able to attend that day. And speaking of attending, you told me when this song played before that you were there. Let's hear Prince's, Bruce's cover of Prince. How was it when you were there? It was good?
Oh, it was amazing.
You enjoyed it?
I've seen many, many Bruce shows. As a Jersey guy, I've been an enormous fan of Bruce for forever, and it was an incredible moment. The Prince moment was an incredible moment.
I imagine pure euphoria, right, Melissa?
It was, I almost cried. It was amazing. And what was great was our two of the four kids were with us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, guys, and all the good luck on Happy Fest. My name is Mark Farrell. If you'd like me to speak to your school or organization, MarkFarrellMotivation.com, MarkFarrellMotivation.com, and this is the guitar solo I was telling you about, Niels Lofgren. If you missed this show, any part of it, or want to hear it again because that's how you like to roll, go on PRN.FM, go into the podcast section. The show is Insight. My name is Mark Farrell. Gary Knowles next. Enjoy your Thursday. Rock on.